When someone wrongs you, ask yourself, what made him do it? Once you understand his concept of good and evil, you'll feel sorry for him and cease to be either amazed or angry. If his concept is similar to yours, then you will be bound to forgive him, since you would have acted as he did in similar circumstances. But if you do not share his ideas of good and evil, then you should find it even easier to overlook the wrongs of someone who is confused and in a moral muddle. You know yourself what you are worth in your own eyes, and at what price you will sell yourself. For men sell themselves at various prices. This is why when Florus was deliberating whether he should appear at Nero's shows, taking part in the performance himself, Agrippinus replied, "Appear by all means." And when Florus inquired, "But why do you not appear?" he answered, "Because I do not even consider the question." For the man who has once stooped to consider such questions, and to reckon up the value of external things, is not far from forgetting the manner of man he is. If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it, and this you have the power to revoke at any moment. The first and most important field of philosophy is the application of principles such as do not lie. Next come the proofs, such as why we should not lie. The third field supports and articulates the proofs by asking, for example, how does this prove it? What exactly is proof? What is logical inference? What is contradiction? What is truth? What is falsehood? Thus the third field is necessary because of the second, and the second because of the first. The most important though, the one that should occupy most of our time, is the first. But we do just the opposite. We are preoccupied with the third field, and give that all our attention, passing the first by altogether. The result is that we lie, but have no difficulty proving why we shouldn't. For I am not everlasting, but a human being, a part of the whole, as an hour is part of the day. Like an hour, I must come, and like an hour pass away. Remember that you must behave in life as at a dinner party. Is anything brought around to you? Put out your hand and take your share with moderation. Does it pass by you? Don't stop it. Is it not yet come? Don't stretch your desire towards it, but wait until it reaches you. Do this with regard to children, to a wife, to public posts, to riches, and you will eventually be a worthy partner of the feasts of the gods. And if you don't even take the things which are set before you, but are able even to reject them, then you will not only be a partner at the feasts of the gods, but also of their empire. Remember that all we have is on loan from fortune, which can reclaim it without our permission, indeed without even advanced notice. Thus we should love all our dear ones, but always with the thought that we have no promise that we may keep them forever, nay, no promise even that we may keep them for long. Never call yourself a philosopher, nor talk a great deal among the unlearned about theorems, but act conformably to them. Thus at an entertainment, don't talk how persons ought to eat, but eat as you ought. For remember that in this manner, Socrates also universally avoided all ostentation. And when persons came to him and desired to be recommended by him to philosophers, he took and recommended them, So well did he bear being overlooked, so that if any talk should happen among the unlearned concerning philosophic theorems, be you for the most part silent, for there is great danger in immediately throwing out what you have not digested. And if anyone tells you that you know nothing, and you are not nettled at it, then you may be sure that you have begun your business. For sheep don't throw up the grass to show the shepherds how much they have eaten, but inwardly digesting their food, they outwardly produce wool and milk. Thus, therefore, do you likewise not show theorems to the unlearned, but the actions produced by them, after they have been digested. Philosophy is not an occupation of a popular nature, nor is it pursued for the sake of self-advertisement. Its concern is not with words, but with facts. It is not carried on with the object of passing the day in an entertaining sort of way and taking the boredom out of leisure. It molds and builds the personality, orders one's life, regulates one's conduct, shows one what one should do and what one should leave undone, sits at the helm, and keeps one on the correct course as one is tossed about in perilous seas. Without it, no one can live a life free of fear or worry. Every hour of the day, countless situations arise that call for advice. And for that advice, we have to look to philosophy. For what prevents us from saying that the happy life is to have a mind that is free, lofty, fearless, and steadfast? A mind that is placed beyond the reach of fear, beyond the reach of desire, that counts virtue the only good, baseness the only evil, and all else but a worthless mass of things, which come and go without increasing or diminishing the highest good, and neither subtract any part from the happy life, nor add any part to it. A man thus grounded must, whether he wills or not, necessarily be attended by constant cheerfulness, and a joy that is deep and issues from deep within. Since he finds delight in his own resources, and desires no joys greater than his inner joys. My advice is really this: what we hear the philosophers saying, and what we find in their writing, should be applied in our pursuit of the happy life. We should hunt out the helpful pieces of teaching, and the spirited and noble-minded sayings, which are capable of immediate practical application, not far-fetched or archaic expressions of extravagant metaphors and figures of speech, and learn them so well that the words become works. No one, to my mind, lets humanity down quite so much as those who study philosophy, as if it were a sort of commercial skill, and then proceed to live in quite a different manner from the way they tell other people to live. All you need are these: certainty of judgment in the present moment, action for the common good in the present moment, and an attitude of gratitude in the present moment for anything that comes your way. Do not spoil what you have by desiring what you have not. Remember that what you have now was once among the things that you only hoped for. True happiness is to enjoy the present, without anxious dependence upon the future, not to amuse ourselves with either hopes or fears, but to rest satisfied with what we have, which is sufficient. For he that is so wants nothing. The greatest blessings of mankind are within us and within our reach. A wise man is content with his lot, whatever it may be, without wishing for what he has not. Pass through this brief patch of time in harmony with nature, and come to your final resting place gratefully. just as a ripened olive might drop, praising the earth that nourished it, and grateful to the tree that gave it growth. Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. Gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all others. It is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor. If you admit to having derived great pleasures, your duty is not to complain about what has been taken away, but to be thankful for what you have been given. Remember that you must behave in life as at a dinner party. Is anything brought around to you? Put out your hand and take your share with moderation. Does it pass by you? Don't stop it. Is it not yet come? Don't stretch your desire towards it, but wait until it reaches you. Do this with regard to children, to a wife, to public posts, to riches, and you will eventually be a worthy partner of the feasts of the gods. And if you don't even take the things which are set before you, but are able even to reject them, then you will not only be a partner at the feasts of the gods, but also of their empire. He is a wise man who does not grieve for the things which he has not, but rejoices for those which he has. Think of yourself as dead. You have lived your life. Now take what's left and live it properly. We should try by all means to be as grateful as possible, for gratitude is a good thing for ourselves in a sense in which justice, that is commonly supposed to concern other persons, is not. Gratitude returns in large measure unto itself. There is not a man who, when he has benefited his neighbor, has not benefited himself. I do not mean for the reason that he whom you have aided will desire to aid you, or that he who you have defended will desire to protect you, or that an example of good conduct returns in a circle to benefit the doer, just as examples of bad conduct recoil upon their authors, and as men find no pity if they suffer wrongs which they themselves have demonstrated the possibility of committing, but that the reward for all the virtues lies in the virtues themselves, for they are not practiced with a view to recompense. The wages of a good deed is to have it done. I am grateful not in order that my neighbor, provoked by the earlier act of kindness, may be more ready to benefit me, but simply in order that I may perform a most pleasant and beautiful act. I feel grateful not because it profits me, but because it pleases me. Cultivate the habit for being grateful for every good thing that comes to you, and to give thanks continuously. And because all things have contributed to your advancement, you should include all things in your gratitude. The desire for imaginary benefits often involves the loss of present blessings. When you arise in the morning, think of what a privilege it is to be alive, to think, to enjoy, to love. The chief task in life is simply this: to identify and separate matters so that I can say clearly to myself which are externals not under my control, and which have to do with the choices I actually control. Where then do I look for good and evil? Not to uncontrollable externals, but within myself, to the choices that are my own. When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. There is only one way to happiness, and that is to cease worrying about the things which are beyond the power of our will. Some things are within our power, while others are not. Within our power are opinion, motivation, desire, aversion, and, in a word, whatever is of our own doing. Not within our power are our body, our property, reputation, office, and, in a word, whatever is not of our own doing. In our control is the most beautiful and important thing, the thing because of which even the God himself is happy, namely the proper use of our impressions. We must concern ourselves absolutely with the things that are under our control and entrust the things not in our control to the universe. If you want your children and wife and friends to live forever, you are a fool, because you're wanting things that aren't within your power to be within your power, and the things that aren't your own to be your own. No person has the power to have everything they want, but it is in their power not to want what they don't have, and to cheerfully put to good use what they do have. The content of your character is your choice. Day by day, what you choose, what you think, and what you do is what you become. There are two things a person should never be angry at: what they can help and what they cannot. Make the best use of what is in your power, and take the rest as it happens. Remember that among the things over which we have complete control are the goals we set for ourselves. I think that when a Stoic concerns himself with things over which he has some but not complete control, such as winning a tennis match, he will be very careful about the goals he sets for himself. In particular, he will be careful to set internal rather than external goals. Thus, his goals in playing tennis will not be to win a match, something external over which he has only partial control, but to play to the best of his ability in the match, something internal, over which he has complete control. By choosing this goal, he will spare himself frustration and disappointment should he lose the match. Since it was not his goal to win the match, he will not have failed to attain his goal as long as he played his best. His tranquility will not be disturbed. Stoics would recommend, for example, that I not concern myself with whether my wife loves me, even though this is something over which I have some but not complete control. But when I do concern myself with this, my goal should not be the external goal of making her love me. No matter how hard I try, I could fail to achieve this goal, and would as a result be quite upset. Instead, my goal should be an internal goal, to behave to the best of my ability in a lovable manner. Similarly, my goal with respect to my boss should be to do my job to the best of my ability. These are goals I can achieve no matter how my wife and my boss subsequently react to my efforts. By internalizing goals in his daily life, the Stoic is able to preserve his tranquility while dealing with things over which he has only partial control.